Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Yeah, hey, my name is Niklas Sleep. I lead the business development department of Vicoland and joined the company basically 1.5 years ago after having worked in a digital agency.
Hi, I'm Hans Freiberg. I'm the CEO and founder of Vicoland. I founded Vicoland 3 years ago, and I also run the incubator that has been instrumental in founding Vicoland. That's called Kokomor. It's a digital agency.
Well, that's super exciting. Thanks, Niklas. Thanks, Hans, for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. I'm very excited about this conversation. Before we dive in and talk a little bit more about what you guys are currently building, if you don't mind, maybe just share a thumbnail version of each of you guys' career to date. Niklas, if you don't mind, I'll start with you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so basically I did my studies in data science and business and then started working in a digital agency where I got acquainted with executing digital projects and advising firms on buying digital targets. So I deep dived into stuff like SEO, social media marketing, but then also website development, website design, so all kinds of things. And what I saw there is that we used to work with freelancers, which brought certain problems that I think we'll get into a bit later. And that was always on a single resource basis. So I also understood the need of agencies and then got the opportunity to start working at Vicoland, where we basically bring together freelancers to teams and enable clients to source projects from these freelance teams. And I found this idea very, very fascinating. I knew the need for it. I see the need for it in the market, and that's why I wanted to participate in it. And that's how I came to Vicoland.
That's super exciting. Thank you for sharing that. Hans, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit more about your background.
So I started my professional life with Bertelsmann, international media company. And at the end of my time with Bertelsmann, I was responsible for their book business in the Spanish and French speaking countries and in Italy. And then in the year 2000, together with Bertelsmann, I founded Kokomor, the incubator and digital agency I just talked about. So at Kokomor, we knew well all the problems and troubles that professional services firms have nowadays. So we thought about a new model and we came up with Vicoland, with virtual companies, that is Vicos in short. And those are in the end, freelance teams, well-organized that can act like real companies.
Well, that's very exciting. And Hans, I'll continue on with you. You've been in the industry for quite some time. You've seen, various trends and basically markets going in all different directions. Tell us a little bit more about what are the different trends that really excite you these days, especially, you know, in the talent acquisition space and freelance communities. What are some of the ideas that you're researching that you're very passionate about?
I am very passionate about large corporations getting into the human cloud. Like for a long time, the human cloud has been some kind of smaller fry gig economy, and it was used by private people or by small companies. And nowadays, enterprises, they have discovered the human cloud. They're more and more working with it. They've recognized that they will not be able to source enough great talent if they do not take into account the human cloud. And I think this trend has been aided by another recent trend, and that is freelance teams, because usually enterprises, larger companies, they have to get projects done, right? And for a project, you do not just need one or two freelancers, you might need a whole team. So there is a sector that has sprung up inside the human cloud that is focused on teams. like there's our company Vicolant, but there are also other companies out there which provide the service, like Collective, for instance, in France, or freelancing teams in the US.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are definitely very exciting opportunities. And pandemic has, you know, exposed a lot of that, especially the last couple of years. So it'll be very exciting and interesting to see where some of these trends actually evolve in the next couple of years. So thank you for sharing that. Nicholas, you as you building the product and, you know, the innovation aspect is a very hot and, you know, most prevalent topic, on at least on our podcast. And we will love discussing strategies and ideas to build and foster a culture of innovation that's organizations of various size, especially when you deal with exceptional candidates and freelancers or the overall talent acquisition space. It's very interesting. Share some of the practical recommendations that you adhere to when it comes to building that culture of innovation at your company.
Yes, definitely. So I think how Vicolant helps our clients to foster this immense potential that is within the human cloud is bringing together flexible talent and enterprise compliance standards. Because what Hans has just described is that so far the human cloud was accessible to mainly smaller or individual persons needing some work, but not enterprises. And I think there are some strategies on how enterprises can ensure that this talent can work together with them in a more compliant way. And let me list some. So there's, for example, the integration to VMS systems. So most of these companies work with vendor management systems for which talent marketplaces, if they want to get integrated into companies, they need to be integrated into vendor management system to comply to their sourcing standards. And then it's also the usage of these teams and talent platforms for larger projects. And that's exactly what we are focusing on right now and where we think we can bring the most innovation to a company, because the innovative projects and kind of the important projects, those are the ones that are currently basically done by traditional professional services firms at a company. And if you enable talent, if you enable them to work on these projects, you ensure that you get the best talent and the best kind of expertise in the most complex projects that you have at your company. So I think that's mainly the point on how we enable our clients to foster this culture of innovation.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Thank you for sharing that. Hans, I want to touch a little bit upon future of work. It's a trend that's been, you know, on the rise, especially the last couple of years, how people collaborate, how professionals, you know, communicate, and just overall from career growth trajectory is very interesting space. What have you seen in the space of future of work that really impacts the way organizations hire, and also on the other side of the spectrum, how freelancers, contingent workers make decisions when it comes to join a particular organization?
So it's always very dangerous to talk about the future, right? Because you might be wrong. But I think the present, especially in the talent space, gives us some hints of what the future will be. And when you look at the present, there is something very notable to be aware of. And that is that companies have a harder and harder time to recruit enough talent, especially enough expert talent in the digital sphere, but also in other areas. Now, why is this so? One reason is that much talent has moved to the human cloud, right? It's people who used to work in offices in cities, and they moved to the mountains, to the beaches, and they're freelancers, they work remote, and they're not likely to come back to sit in the office again and do exactly what employees used to do. So these people have dropped out of the labor supply in terms of employees. And when you look today at the total labor supply in most large economies, what you see is that there has been a trend, and there continues to be a trend, towards more freelance labor. Like in the US, the share of freelance labor in the whole labor supply is already more than a third, and expected to go up to about 50% by the year 2030. In Europe, we're trailing a bit behind that, but we're around 25%. It's also rising. So what does that mean? There is a hybrid, or let's call it a blended labor supply today. Now, companies have a hard time to adapt to that because they're still geared to recruiting employees. Most HR professionals nowadays, when it's about recruiting, they think about recruiting employees. But of course, given the supply side in the labor market, if you want to stay in business and if you want to keep flourishing, you have to adapt your production, your delivery model. And given the blended supply, you need a blended delivery model, a blended production model. I think this is quite foreseeably the future. So companies must integrate the human cloud into their equation, into their ongoing usual processes and organization. And there are different ways to do that, right? You can hire single freelancers, and many companies already do that. And that works well, but it has limits, right? It has limits because it's quite cost intensive. It's quite an effort to recruit single freelancers for every single task. You know, you have to look for them, you have to find them, you have to contract them, onboard them, coordinate, supervise, pay, administer. That is quite some work. And then also you have to be very careful not to get smacked up into worker misclassification, right? So alternative models are needed in order to enable a blended production model. And at Vicoland, we provide such an alternative model with freelance teams structured as virtual companies, Vicos, like, which can act like real companies. So we can talk more about this later on, but Vicos solve the problems, the effort problem, and also the legal problem, the compliance problem. Now, the question is how and why freelancers would get into all this, in these blended delivery models. And I think here what is key is the freedom of choice that freelancing offers, right? I think that is the root that is driving the freelance revolution. It's not that, you know, people want to avoid taxes or social security. I mean, there are these cases, but that would not be enough to really have this kind of revolution that we are going through. It's the freedom of choice regarding what you do, whom you work with, when you do it, and from where you do it. And I think the more companies acknowledge that, the better they will be able to have a blended delivery, a blended production model, and the companies which do that best will thrive.
Right, absolutely. You definitely touched upon some very interesting points that I would love to, you know, double click on. But first, Nicholas, in this highly competitive market, so this war for talent is real out there with organizations. You know, as we shifted to, you know, totally virtual environment to be able to tap into talent on a global scale, but that also increased the competition from organizations that are much bigger, much faster, that offering much greater benefits packages, for example. What are some of the strategies that you perhaps recommend to some of your client companies, or maybe you had observed some organizations utilize when it comes to attracting the top talent, because it's an interesting space and it's an ongoing challenge, especially, you know, in deep technology, for example. Share some thoughts from that perspective with us.
Yes. So I think for clients, the first thing that you as a company have to realize is that in the future, the best possible talent for a project is most likely not going to be employed at your company. The best possible talent will be freelancing with a rising share of freelancers. So that's the first thing that you have to realize, because then I think you just think of, hey, how can I get alternative sourcing methods? And maybe how can I integrate freelance pools, freelance marketplaces? How can I tap into this into this world? Because you need to prepare yourself as an organization to do that. You need to change the way you onboard people. You need to change the way you collaborate together. People will not be in offices. So the whole organizational change does not have to be underestimated if you include this this freelancing talent in your company. And then I think the second point is you have to ensure that your employer branding is also the same for your freelancing or for the contingent workforce as it is for your full-time workforce. We have seen companies spend a lot of money and effort into employer branding and benefits for full-time talent, but rather dealing with contingent talent in not the same way and offer them not the same benefits if as full-time employees. So that's also something with which you incentivize people to work for you and with which you incentivize people who will probably be the best or have the best skills for the specific project that you want to do. I wanted to touch on one other point. I also think that this question is very well relevant for marketplaces. So as there will be more freelance marketplaces, I think it's also important, how does a freelance marketplace make sure that they get the best talent into their community? And I think here, two points are important. I think the first one is, of course, you have projects, you have work to do, because if you're a freelancer, you're searching for work and you want to get exposed to high profile clients and large projects. So freelance marketplaces should think of ways to onboard companies to offer them offer the supplies at these projects. And then I believe you also have to foster collaboration within your community. So it's very important that you bring people together, you let people collaborate, and you let people communicate on projects, on meaningful work that they would like to do with meaningful people that they worship.
Hans, you've mentioned something around a very sensitive subject, which is around worker classification, especially when you deal with freelancers, contingent workers. And, you know, I've been there myself. I've been a consultant for, you know, large IT corporations, you know, years back. And it's a very gray area in the sense that there's not a lot of exposure in terms of some of the risks and penalties that are potentially coming out of, you know, potential misclassification. What are some of the most common pitfalls that you see companies fall into when it comes to perhaps maybe not even considering worker classification as a top priority, or some areas that they can really improve upon that could help mitigate or even avoid some of these risks?
Yeah. So one obvious risk is obviously misassessment. You know, some companies still think that the main criterion for misclassification is that, you know, a freelancer makes so much money with the company, or, you know, doesn't have, you know, outside projects. But that's not the case anymore, right? In most legislations all over Europe, European Union, Britain, also with IR35, also in the US, the main criterion for misclassification or not is if a worker is integrated into a company's processes, right? So that is important to get right. And once you have gotten that right, the next pitfall is that you might make an effort to not integrate the freelancers into your processes, which already is kind of difficult in itself, right? Because you want to fill gaps in your company. So you have a tendency to integrate them, but let's say you somehow manage not to. But then, you know, when a push comes to shove and you're in front of the judge will ask you, when you say, okay, freelancers, they all organize themselves. Okay, where can I see that, right? And when the judge asks the question, where can I see that? When you then have to say, okay, this was over the phone and some emails and some chats and so on, the judge will say, okay, sorry, there's no documentation on this. So unfortunately, this is misclassification. You have to pay Social Security and it might even be penal according to the legislation you're dealing with here. And so what is really important is A, you don't integrate the freelancers into your processes, and B, that is documented. So it must be documented automatically. systematically that the freelancers did organize themselves and that decide themselves what they would do, how exactly and when and at which conditions, right? And then when you got that, you can be quite sure.
Right, absolutely. We could probably dedicate an entire episode to that particular area because it's so broad and it's so complex, but I appreciate.
Yeah, it's true. No, we're running webinars on this with law firms, right, to explain how Vicoland makes sure you don't fall into the misclassification pits. It is quite complex and, social securities and legislations all over the place are scaring companies, are scaring employers, which is not a good thing either, right?
Yeah.
There is so much uncertainty today.
They vary so broadly from not only at the country level, but at the state, at the, you know, even the jurisdiction. It's very complex. So definitely, definitely looking forward to diving a little bit deeper into that with you guys. Yeah. Nicholas, in terms of, you've touched upon winning the war on talent acquisition, being able to attract some of the best talent to your organizations. But then there's another layer of complexity, which is kind of that quote unquote war on retention, where companies, some succeed, some fail in terms of being able to attract the top talent, but then to retain them. What are some of the strategies or practical recommendations that you have observed in some of the, you know, your space, where organizations are able to retain the top talent better than the others?
Yeah, I think there, the main point is really up and reskilling methods. So what we see in today's world that technological innovation just happens so fast that basically the half-life time of a skill just diminishes. So whenever you learn a skill today, you cannot be sure that that skill is still kind of most up to date, probably tomorrow or in like 2 weeks from now. So if a company kind of wants to retain top talent, they need to adapt to changing market environments. And that means they need to basically offer this talent to learn new skills, to apply these new skills in real life situations. And I think that's of course done through like theoretical reskilling, but also through putting people in different projects and in different jobs and going from like a role-based work to more project-based work, because that enables people to work together with other people from the company and then also apply different skills that they have learned in different real life environments.
Right, absolutely. Hans, there's another area that I'm very passionate about, and it's very complex as well. And I'm talking about interviewing. I've been on both sides of the equation, where I've been the hiring manager and I've also been the candidate myself. And I'm sure you guys have experienced both sides. And a lot of the interviews are based on that past personal experience when it comes to the interviewer. And the reason it's flawed is because there's too much emphasis on what are the weaknesses that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that are really missing on our team, and does that candidate fill that void? What's your take on interviews? How do you advise some of your clients to make sure that, you know, they increase the batting average when interviewing and setting the right expectations from both sides? Just share some best practices there from your perspective.
Well, I like to provoke a little bit when answering that type of question. I like to say the best interview is no interview, right? The best way of vetting, and interviewing is about vetting, right? Making sure the person fits the person you need. The best way of vetting is having worked with another person, right? Knowing a person from practical experience. So that works very well with freelance teams, because usually freelancers have worked together with other great freelancers and they can recruit them. That's how we built our VCOs. Now, of course, I'm aware that this doesn't work when you recruit employees, right? Because they're usually, you haven't worked before with these people, right? So you need to conduct interviews and you have to do vetting based on interviews. And here our advice is, do not talk about the CV. Talk about practical matters. Talking about the CV is like talking to a company about its advertising, right? but you don't buy their advertising, you buy their product. So you should talk in the interview about practical matters, about practical cases. They should fit the CV, the experience of the person, they should fit the job, they should fit the employer, but you get much more out of an interview, right? When you talk about something that the candidate can practically relate to. And you can say things like, tell me about a time where you did this or that under such and such circumstances. This is totally different from asking, tell me why you left this job and chose that new employer, right? I mean, certainly the candidate has a great story on that, right? That's advertising. But when you talk about a case, right, and maybe even do an assessment center, you really see what a person is like.
Right, right, absolutely. That it's very complex, and in terms of the just being able to build that two-way street in terms of a conversation where you also give an opportunity to the candidate, make the right assessment, ask the right questions, so that they can also make the determination if you are the type of leader that they would want to join, or is this the right, you know, environment that they will thrive
in? Absolutely. They get to know you on these occasions, because you will discuss a case, you can discuss practical things, right? And yeah, the candidate can also ask you back. So, you know, how would you do this in your company? I like that. I like to be challenged by candidates personally. Like sometimes I do brain teasers, and then, you know, I say to the candidate, do you have questions to me, right? And I encourage them, do a brain teaser with me, take revenge. Yeah. So I think it's very important to have an interview on eye level and to have an exchange. I recall interviewing Niklas, and he really challenged me on the, you know, the strategy of Vicoland and with, you know, what kind of partners we should talk and should not talk and why. And I really liked that.
That's great. Well, Niklas, can you share some of your thoughts on interviewing, and what are some of your recommendations to improve that process?
Yeah, I think so. I will focus more on the candidate side, because Hans explained very well the hiring manager side. And I think it's really about asking good questions. Of course, also kind of mentioning practical examples, but I think in the way you ask questions and what type of questions you ask, people on the other side realize you've been really listening to kind of what is going on, and you've been thinking about why this makes sense or why this doesn't make sense. And based on the type of question someone asks, I think you can really well estimate if he is motivated about something, if he has thought about a specific topic, and also, yeah, if he's passionate about it.
Right, absolutely. It's interesting to observe how, you know, at times, if the candidate is also not asking the questions or seem disengaged, it could also be, you know, an opportunity to identify why they're feeling that way, or maybe they're disinterested, or it's just so many variables that, you know, it makes it a very complex and interesting space.
Yeah, and you can also tell if it's just basically questions that are very general, right, where just someone thought about like general questions that they basically just remember. And I think you can really well judge on that.
Right, right, absolutely. Hans, in terms of an advice or series of career advice that you had received early in your career that you continuously refer to back even these days, and also something that you share with others, talk a little bit more from that perspective. What are some of your career advice or recommendations that you can share?
I think the best advice I got was from a professor with whom I discussed career options. And he said, do not take an in order to job, right? And he said an in order to job is a job you just do in order to do something else afterwards. So I was considering consulting at that time. And I said, okay, I want to do consulting in order to work afterwards for such and such type of company. And he said, don't do it. If you want to work for such and such type of company, do it now, right? Because you will learn, you will not lose time. And I think that was a great piece of advice. I'm still grateful for it.
Niklas, what about you?
I think the greatest advice I ever got was don't get so emotional about losses and pitfalls or backfalls that you have. So kind of the sentence life goes on, right? That it's normal that stuff doesn't happen, like that you don't win everything, and that you maybe need 3 tries in order to get to something. But if you stay humble, if you stay motivated, and if you are passionate about something, it will turn out and you will get there. But maybe also having backfalls is a strategy of learning, and it can really help you.
Nicholas, what's your content diet is looking like these days? What are the different sources that you consume on a daily basis that really help you stay ahead of the curve, you know, stay informed on all of the things that are developing in your industry?
Yeah. Oh, there are different ones. So, of course, I would say reading is a big part of the content diet. So that means like books, but then also general newspapers, articles about the future of work and the freelance industry. And then I would say the second thing is really podcasts. So right now there are so many interesting podcasts from industry leaders where interesting people are, people who have been in this industry for quite a while, but then also startup founders who come with very new ideas, and you can listen it like on the bike in the morning, you can listen it while you run, you can listen it at night. So just throw in the earpods and have a podcast while you ride to work. And then I would say the third kind of part of my content diet is exchanges with like-minded industry folks. So in the business we are, where we currently build up Vicoland and scaling the marketplace on both sides, we have very interesting talks with a lot of clients, with professional services firms, with vendor management systems, with managed service providers, but then also with freelancers who have founded their own companies, who currently maybe struggle with finding talent in order to scale their self-employment. And that all helps in order to build like your holistic opinion of the market.
Hans, in terms of what are you currently reading, what books in your library that you're currently enjoying, and more importantly, what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Okay, let me first briefly introduce that by saying what is my concept of a content diet. I think as for food diet, it's very important for a content diet to be diverse, to be varied. So I do not only read stuff that is related to my business and to Human Cloud and so on. I really try to get input outside the box. And therefore, I recommend to read novels, right? Nonfiction that has nothing to do with your job. I'm reading a great book today. That is by a Spanish author, Irene Vallejo, and she wrote about the origin of books in the ancient world, where it was all papyruses, right? Very exciting book. I think it will be translated to English. It will be called Infinity in the Reed or something like that in English. So it is important for me, not only regarding books, to have quite some intake from outside the box. For instance, I really like the blog of Scott Galloway. I don't know if you know him. I follow that. And I try to read magazines. I do that quite eclectically, right? Mostly online stuff that just interests me, single articles. I wouldn't sit down with a magazine and read it from cover to back. Now, the book I always recommend, right? Non-professionally, the book I always recommend is 100 Years of Solitude, maybe it's called, by García Márquez. I don't know what you call it, 100 años de soledad, 100 Years of Solitude.
Right.
Okay, so I always recommend that because it captures the human condition in like 400 pages, and throughout, you know, a bit over 100 years, which is, I think, something that has been rarely achieved in literary history. And you get so much excitement and so much learning out of these pages that it's definitely worth it to read it. And then professionally, I mean, there are a couple of things I would recommend. I really liked The Challenger Sale. That's a book I recently read on selling. How do you sell well? And I always recommend Confessions of an Advertising Man by David Ogilvy. So much from my side on this issue, but please double click if you want.
No, those are great recommendations. We'll make the titles available in the show notes for our listeners to check out. Last but not least, Nicholas, I'll leave it with you. Who do you consider your mentor and why?
Who do I consider my mentor? So I would definitely consider Hans as my mentor right now. We've been working, we're working together quite closely.
I'm flushing here.
Yeah. I get advice time to time. But then I would also say, of course, my dad, because he, I get good advice from him, not only on a professional level, but I would also say on like a kind of personal level on dealing with things way outside of work, which I think is a challenge too, right?
Well, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. And guys, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the guests on the Ivy podcast is we do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you guys.
I told you it's very dangerous to talk about the future. So I'm the poor guy. I'm the poor guy whom you asked about the future, right?
That's right. That's right.
I hope I'll be damn right.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
It was very exciting to talk to you. See you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.